Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Who's, man?
Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concession stand. You going to the bathroom. Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, if you guys are getting your seats, I'm going to sing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Welcome to another Parents Coach Parents Network. I'm your host, M.H. Scott. And as always, we promise you some information that hopefully will be an eye-opener for you. And if nothing else, it'll be something that you can walk away and say, okay, hey, I learned something today, or I shared something today with some other parents out there. Because it's most important that we, as parents of student athletes, future student athletes, former athletes, not yet born student athletes, get this information out, share this information, or take in the information, so that your child can get the best out of his or her dreams and the best out of his or her opportunities to play at the next level. You know, we don't want to miss out on any opportunities, so we highly encourage each and every student athlete and each and every parent to be a part of the Parents Go to Parents Network. We welcome you at any given time to be a part of the program. And hopefully you can get the best out of the program as we're here to serve you, you know, because our motto is help us help you. Help us help you. It's not about what we can do and how well we're doing it and standing up here, high-fiving ourselves or patting ourselves on the back. It's all about what we can do to help the next group of parents coming along get the best out of their program. So, on that note, as I always say, we're here to do what we got to do to help you get the best out of me. And I don't like to start my show without giving my man, Mr. Keith Wright, graduate of the University of Harvard, played a successful 4 years up there at the University of Harvard, and now has moved on to do bigger and better things in life. But during the time I had Keith, you know, here in the area with me and was communicating with Keith on a regular basis, he put together this little piece for me. So I told him I'd play this piece each and every time we come on the air here at the Parents Coach Parents Network. So on that note, Keith, where you at?
Student of the game, had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friend. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing, I'm out the plumber, out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Keith says it best each and every time for us. He's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. You know, I'm starting to wonder if that's like a mantra or something that they have up there at Harvard, because I believe I heard the president echo similar words or words right along that same effect, making smart cool. But I love to hear it. And he's just simply letting our students know and our children know and other athletes out there know that it's okay to be smart, okay to get out there and do what you have to do in the books, in the books. So without a doubt, we're going to move forward with this show. And if you want to call in and join in on the conversation, I have no problem with that. Love to hear from you. You can reach us at 917-889-8095. 917-9-8-0-9-5. Love to hear from you. Love to hear your thoughts on some of the things that we're talking about. Just recently had another wonderful call, you know, every third Sunday of the month, Mothers of Athletes, which is that great group, come up and have a little conference call, and I just recently finished up a call with them where I had some great dialogue with some people that's out there that's trying to do something, again, trying to do something in the community for our children, you know, and in all that conversation, and in all of that conversation, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I got out of it was that there are other people that's interested in making sure that our children are getting the best out of the situation, getting the best out of the situation. Because if we're not out here to help our children get the best out of the situation, then and I don't like to hear that. I just want to know who's out there to make sure that our children get the best out of the situation. If you're interested in making sure that our children get the best out of the situation, then I invite you to be a part of the Parents Coaching Parents Network, you know, and any other organization out there that's doing like-minded things, because I'm going to try to connect with as many organizations and community-based grassroots components that's out there to make sure, again, that our children are getting the best out of the situation. Well, I don't know if you get the NCAA's newsletter, but the NCAA just recently put it out, a little newsletter. And I guess they're really trying to get a feel for how can they best serve the school. In their newsletter, they have a survey, and it says, in an effort to improve our services to the high school communities, the NCAA's Eligibility Center invites you, me being the person that received the newsletter, to complete a brief survey about your interaction with the Eligibility Center over the past 12 months. This survey will help us continue to increase the services and resources most valuable to you. And I'm reading through this survey, I'm kind of sort of looking at the survey like, there's some questions in there that kind of make me wonder where are they going with these questions. So they say, the survey will take less than 5 minutes to complete. Thank you again for your willingness to help. And as I'm looking at the survey from the NCAA, and if you receive the NCAA's newsletter, you can always pull the survey up, or you can reach out to us here at the Parents Coaching Parents Network, and we can send you a copy of the survey. But the first question that comes out, it says, what is your primary responsibility? Then they want to know, are you a coach? Are you a counselor? Are you an athletic director, principal, head of the school, assistant principal, registrar, or academic dean, you know, whatever your position is. I'm a parent, but I have access to this information from time to time. Then they want to know, please choose the words that best describe your school's location, urban, suburban, or rural. Ha-ha. Now I'm starting to ask a few questions. Does it really make a difference? Does it really make a difference? Because if our children are should be on somewhere along the lines of equal footing, then it doesn't really make a difference whether or not they're coming from an urban environment, suburban environment, or rural environment. You know, I may be wrong, and I may be thinking off in left field somewhere, but, you know, that's one of those questions that kind of like start to separate and segregate our children from the rest of the population. Then the next question, the third question after that is, please choose whether your school is public or private. But then you have two bubbles to fill in whether or not your school is public or private. Now, this is the question that prompted me to want to share this information with those of you listening to this call this evening or listening to this show this evening. And I'm hoping that this will also trigger some questions out of the many of you that are on this call, because I'm looking at a number of callers that's out there this evening. I got quite a few different area codes and not solely from one geographical location. So I'm hoping that this question is one of those questions that will trigger you to want to call in. Again, if you want to call in, you can give us a call at 917-889-8095. Check this question out. Approximately what percentage of your student population receives free or reduced lunch? Approximately what percentage of your student population receives free or reduced lunch? I had to pause. I had to stop for a moment. And I'm still asking myself this question. Why would this be a question coming out of the NCAA? Maybe somebody out there that's listening to this call this evening can share some insight with me on why would this be a question coming from the NCAA. And I understand they're trying to better serve the high school communities and, you know, do what they can do to make sure every child has an opportunity to get the best out of his or her dream. Question to me is a little out of place. And again, that may be the shallow mind of mine. That may be something that I'm just not grasping at this point. So please, if you have an answer, suggestion, recommendation, some thoughts, please, by all means, call in and share something with me, because I'm really fuzzy on that one. I'm really, really, really fuzzy on that one. When you call in, 917-889-8095, you hit option one, that'll let me know that you got a question or you want to bring some light to the table. Let's move on with the question. And there's going to be some other things we're going to talk about this evening, but I wanted to go over this survey since I was looking at it and kind of like, do some questions in my head. I wanted to know if other parents out there or other folks out there had the same questions as they were listening to me read off this survey. Next question. How often do you contact the NCAA's Eligibility Center? Okay, that's a legitimate question to me. You know, how often do you interact with the NCAA's Eligibility Center? Because they want to know what the high schools are doing. You know, if you don't communicate with them but once a year, there may be a slight problem, because you at least have to send out transcripts at least once a year. So if that's your only communication with them, then there's really a problem, because updating your information as far as your core courses are concerned, updating your information as far as the point of contact at your school, that's a concern. So if you are one of those high schools that do not reach out to the Eligibility Center on a regular basis, you have a problem at your school. You have a problem at your school, and we as parents should be able to fix that problem by making that, letting that be known at our school board. Next question. How often do you visit the NCAA's Eligibility Center high school portal? In other words, a website, and then you go to the high school, so on and so forth, and check things out, you know, from your standpoint as an administrator within the school system. Good question, legitimate question. And again, they want to find out how much are you actually interacting with the NCAA. Good, I can work with that. But again, remember I threw that other question out there some time ago. I still need to hear something from you on that question. Next question. How would you rate your satisfaction with the NCAA's Eligibility Center? Are you very satisfied? Satisfied? Neither satisfied nor dissatisfied? Dissatisfied or very dissatisfied? Okay, moving right along. Please answer that very honestly. It's not a political answer. It doesn't require a political answer. Answer that very honestly, please. Next question. How would you rate the frequency or number of communications you have received from the Eligibility Center? How would you rate the frequency or number of communications that you have received from the Eligibility Center? That is a very good question because they need to know. Are you communicating with the Eligibility Center on a regular basis? Or are you just simply waiting until that they reach out to you? So you need to be communicating with the Eligibility Center on a regular basis. Again, that goes back to that other question, how often do you interact with the Eligibility Center? You know, how would you rate your frequency or number of communication you have received? Communication could be phone calls, could be correspondence, you know, could be emails, whatever method you choose to use. How often do you do that? And some of the answers that they throw out to you are too much, just right, and not enough. Too much, that's right, and not enough. So I would say that, you know, I would hope that you hear from them too much, not too much, not enough, or at a just right pace. You know, I would say that. Yep. I would definitely have to say that. Okay, let's go to the next question. Next question would say, what is the primary way you stay current on information from the NCAA's Eligibility Center? What is your primary method? In other words, do you receive email notifications or newsletters? Do you check the high school portal? Live interaction, social media updates, or other avenues or other opportunities that you have? You know, do you have a direct hotline to them, or do you walk in the building once or twice a year and, you know, to go visit somebody? Or, you know, how do you stay current with the NCAA's Eligibility Center information? Because that is so important. But I still go back to still go back to that initial question, that question that really drew a conversation earlier on. The question about the location, the best described, the location of your school, urban, suburban, or rural, and then followed up by, is your school public school, considered public school or private school? And then this is the one that really caught my attention. Approximately what percentage of your student population receive free or reduced lunch? Now, what does that have to do with what the NCAA should be doing other than trying to do some targeting and identifying some of our students using that ugly word that a lot of folks in society have choose to use as at-risk students? Okay, and then the survey goes on to talk about a couple of other things. It talks about, please indicate, please indicate your level of agreement or disagreement with the following statements regarding the reasons athletes at your school may struggle to meet NCAA academic initial eligibility requirements. Now, that, folks, we really and truly have to look at that and honestly answer that. And if there's a number of issues that can be addressed at a local level, I'm all for it. I'm all for standing alongside you at the school board meeting to address these issues, because that's where it starts. It doesn't necessarily start at the NCAA level. It starts at what is our high school going to do to ensure that these kids are eligible. Let me sidetrack for a second. As of August 2016, the minimum grade point average that will be required will be 2.3 for any student athlete, our children, trying to attend a Division I institution. Let me say that again. As of August 1st, 2016, the minimum grade point average will be a 2.3. Minimum grade point average will be a 2.3 for any one of our children trying to attend any institution at the Division I level to play sports. So, this part of the survey is very valuable to us. Part of the survey can be answered probably at some of our local forums. And what I mean by that, at our school board meetings, at our PTA meetings. Because let me read this here part again. Please indicate your level of agreement or disagreement with the following statements regarding the reasons student athletes at your school may struggle to meet the NCAA academic initial eligibility requirements. If they are struggling to meet these initial academic eligibility requirements, then that starts within our school system. That starts within our school system on whether or not they are providing our kids with the proper tools to make things happen. Let's look at some of these questions. First question, and you get to bubble in whether or not you strongly agree. Neither agree nor disagree or strongly disagree. Okay, let's go through this here little list that they put out here. Okay, let's go through this list. The first one says, poor academic preparation prior to ninth grade. I'll read that again for you. Poor academic preparation prior to ninth grade. Parents, that's telling you that the ball starts rolling, the game is starting to be played prior to the ninth grade. That's your hint, that's your indicator, that's your flashing light, that's your beacon. This game is starting prior to the ninth grade. If your child is not properly prepared academically prior to the ninth grade, he or she will struggle going into the ninth grade. That is something that we can address early on. Parents Go to Parents Network, we like to focus on helping our student athletes, our children, excuse me, I hate using that little ugly word, student athlete, helping our children get the best out of their situation during their middle school years. That way, when they get to the high school days, they're on track and on target. Okay, next question. The school's culture. Well, I'm going to let you define that and take that on any way you choose to take that on, because I can look at the school's culture and give you a whole lot of different things that pop up in my head when I hear that terminology. But I'm going to let you handle that yourself. But this is where we should be concerned, because this is a survey that went out to administrators and coaches and athletic directors and all these other things. So if we have a foul school culture that our children are trying to survive in, then we got an issue. Really got an issue. But check out this next question. Home life / parental support. Now they're asking administrators, you know, the principals, deans of schools, academic deans, whoever you call them, coaches, athletic directors, they're asking them about home life / parental support. Is these one of the reasons why students struggle to meet the NCAA's academic initial eligibility requirements? Again, parents, this is your opportunity to stick your foot in. This is your opportunity to get involved, be a part of the process. Be a part of the solution, not the problem, because we're here to help you. So that question shouldn't even be on the board, because we as parents should be doing what we have to do. And if you don't understand or don't quite know or don't quite grasp the whole process, whatever, by all means, please, 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 reach out for assistance. You got a number of organizations out there that's out there ready and able to assist you, help you, guide you, that have resources, that have lived the experience. I just talked about one a few minutes ago, Mothers of Athletes. Great organization out there trying to make things happen. Just had a wonderful conference call with them, and they had an open forum, and there was a whole lot of dialogue going on, a whole lot of great information being shared. So this question about home life / parental support shouldn't even be on this survey, NCAA. All right, moving right along. Poor academic performance early in high school speaks for itself, folks. Next question. Lack of motivation, academic goal settings. Okay, if that's the case, then we need to get some counselors and call them to the carpet. And the kids need to understand that some of that responsibility is on them. And some of that lies upon us as parents. Lack of exposure to NCAA rules. Yes, that's a big issue. Because every school, and I listen to Mothers of Athletes, and I've listened to Mothers of College Athletes, and I've listened to sports moms and other organizations out there, every school does not make sure that NCAA requirements are made readily available and updated and put in the face of our student athletes on a regular basis. We need to call for, at a minimum, two forms or two sessions or two assemblies for every high school athlete in that school with their parents right there in the assembly. If you have to do a function at night, you can do one during the springtime, you can do one during the fall. But at a minimum, it should be some form where parents have access to NCAA rules and requirements along with their student athletes. Should be done every year. And the only way it's going to happen, parents, if we demand it. We must demand it. Simply ask your school, are they planning on doing one? If they're not planning on doing it, why not? Why not? Okay, let's move on to the next question. Quality of teachers at school. Okay. Well, we know, and that's an ongoing issue. Matter of fact, I was sitting down reading the paper earlier that I was working on as far as some homework assignment that I had, and We talked about No Child Left Behind and talked about the issue of students, teachers being forced to simply teach reading and math and all other aspects of academia. Academics have kind of sort of went out the window because teachers are forced to focus on reading and math because that's the information that's being tested on these standardized tests nowadays. We can't hold the teacher responsible for that. Their feet are being held to the fire for that reason. But we must make sure that our kids have every opportunity possible for them to succeed. Next it says, students' lack of belief in academic abilities and potentials. Well, that speaks for itself, and I'm simply going to move on that one. I could probably talk about that one for quite some time, but I'm going to let that rest, and we're going to move on from there. Too many extracurricular, time commitments, sports, part-time job, and other activities. If that's the reason why our kids are missing out on initial eligibility or struggling to make initial eligibility, that may be the case. Insufficient courses are offered. If the courses are on the core course list, they must be saying that there aren't enough courses offered on the core course list. Take the advantage of the ones that you have listed on your core course list. Or if you know of other courses that's being offered, hey, see if your school will add that to the core course list and we move on. Lack of knowledge by school and athletic staff. Wow, that's at the bottom of the list. That is at the bottom of the list, which should have been at the top of the list. That is at the bottom of the list, which should have been at the top of the list. Well, folks, we're going to step away for a second and take a little short break, give you a chance to go wet your whistle or pencil or something, and I'll come back to the last half hour of the show here at the Parents Coach Parents Network. I am your host, M.A. Scott, and as always, hey, we welcome your conversation. Join in on the conversation. We're going to step away. We'll be right back shortly.
What is the NAIA?
The National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics is the organizing body that oversees college athletics for its member schools. Schools who are members of the NAIA are made of smaller colleges located in the United States and Canada. The NAIA was established in 1952 as an organization to establish competition between colleges. The NAIA sponsors 13 different sports and runs 23 annual championships for those sports, in both men's and women's athletics. The NAIA has different member schools than the NCAA and has different eligibility requirements as well. To make sure you are eligible to compete at an NAIA school, you need to register with the NAIA Eligibility Center at playnaia.org. Feel free to learn more at our website, athleticscholarships.net. Get recruited to play college sports today.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
I think as early as possible. It seems like in this day and age, kids are thinking about it younger and younger, and colleges are actually getting out and communicating with kids as they're younger. So it seems to me, at least by freshman, sophomore year, get an idea of whether you want to play in college, and if the answer to that is yes, start to figure out what your game plan is and move forward.
And with the 43rd pick in the 2012 NBA draft, the Atlanta Hawks select Mike Scott. from the University of Virginia.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.
Okay, folks, we're back. We're back. We're back. And hopefully I've shared some information with you this evening. And all this information that I talked about this evening is found on the NCAA's latest November 2014 newsletter that came out. The Health and Ability Center puts out a newsletter. And this information is found on their newsletter in a survey, that they actually have out. So hopefully that information, hopefully you can dig into that and check it out and see how it best works for you, because the survey is something that's vitally important. I have actually saved a copy of the survey, so if you want to reach out to us, feel free to shoot us an email at pcphr@aol.com. I'll say it again, pcphr@aol.com. And just let me know that you heard about the survey on the Parents Coach and Parents Network here on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll get a copy of that survey out to you. Have no problem with that, because it's all about sharing information, working with and through each other, and making sure things are happening for the best of our, for our student athletes. Okay, moving right along, giving you some more information off of the newsletter is something new that the NCAA has decided to do. It's called the High School Task. The High School Task. A new task has recently been assigned to high schools requiring requesting transcripts for all registered students to have completed who have completed their junior year or six semesters, you know, because we have some of our young folks out there doing this reclassifying stuff. But if they completed six semesters, they have this new task, as well as an official final transcript with proof of graduation and graduate for graduating seniors. Please note, and this is the NCAA talking, this isn't me talking, this is the NCAA talking in their newsletter. Please note that this is a courtesy to notify that it is time to send a transcript for the NCAA's Eligibility Center register, who is currently attending your school. In other words, you need to let the high school know, or the high school need to know, once you get to that sixth semester, that's when that transcript needs to be sent. You know, that was a conversation that we had on a conference call with our mothers of athletes here recently. And that, as it very clearly says, that transcript goes out after the sixth semester, and then you have the second transcript go out. But there's only two transcripts that can be sent out from the high school, and they have to come from the high school. But those transcripts have to go out from the high school, and there's only two of them. One goes out after sixth semester, and the second one will go out as proof of graduation for the graduating senior. The NCAA goes on to say, your school will be assigned a transcript task throughout the year when it is time to send transcripts for those students already registered with the NCAA's Eligibility Center that have attended your school, or for newly registered students. Your school will receive a reminder email until transcript has been sent or uploaded for all the students listed as registered for your school. In other words, the NCAA is trying to step it up a little bit so that when, if your child registers with the Eligibility Center, like, you know, some of us have went on to register our kids as early as our freshman year for sophomore year or whatever, and your child is registered with the Eligibility Center, when they reach that sixth semester in high school, then the eligibility center will let them know, hey, we need a copy of the transcript. Because what has been happening in the past, that transcript has been delayed. Then our guidance counselors and school officials have a whole lot of other things to do. But when you have a student athlete trying to get registered with the eligibility center and only thing is holding him or her up is a copy of the transcript, or the coaches cannot look at the transcript via the eligibility website, then that's an issue. At one point in time, the NCAA was, they were behind and ensuring that kids were meeting that initial eligibility. They were behind, far behind. And a lot of that was based upon transcripts lagging in the system and schools not getting these transcripts out on time. So as a result, they're starting to send out a reminder to simply let you know that, hey, time to send that transcript in. Again, there are two transcripts that should go out each year. Well, not each year. There are two transcripts that should go out during that child's high school career. One is after the sixth semester, and another one is upon graduation. Sixth semester and upon graduation as a graduating senior. Next thing the NCAA lays out here in this newsletter is a did you know? Did you know that Division I's academic requirements are changing for 2016 graduates? And then it goes on to a nice helpful guide on what we need to know as far as these changes that's coming on. It says the 2016 Division I new academic requirements. The initial eligibility standards for NCAA Division I college-bound student athletes are changing. And if you didn't know that, I stated that earlier in the broadcast. Again, as of August 1st, 2016, there will be some changes. And those changes, the primary one that I highlighted was the grade point average of a 2.3 will be the minimum for a Division I school. It says college-bound student athletes first entering a NCAA Division I college or university on or after August 1st of 2016 will need to meet the new requirement rules in order to receive athletic aid. In other words, in order to receive your scholarship, you must meet the new academic rules. And in order to receive athletic aid or to receive your scholarship or to practice or to compete during the first year. And what are the new requirements? Complete 16 core courses. Well, 16 core courses was on the table once before. This is for a fully qualified, a full qualifier. And I'm saying that for a reason, because the three breakdowns that they're giving us here are full qualifiers, academic redshirts, or non-qualifiers. I'm going to give you the information for the full qualifiers first. For a full qualifier, you must complete 16 core courses. 16 core courses. Parents, note on this date, I said 16 core courses. But I want you to note on this day, at some point in time, I can see that 16 core courses going up to 18. I can see it going up to 18 core courses, especially with the changing of the GPA. I see it going up to 18 core courses. So start preparing yourself. Stay abreast of the information. Please don't allow this information to get the best of you or overwhelm you, because this is us ensuring that our children get the best out of their situation. We must be their biggest advocates. be an advocate. Hashtag be an advocate, as I say so often on Facebook and Twitter. Okay, let's look at the 16 core courses. 10 of the 16 courses must be completed before the seventh semester. In other words, before the start of the high school, before the start of the senior year, 10 of these core courses must be completed before the start of the seventh semester or their senior year, if they're normally a four-year kid. And, I want you to put an asterisk up there now, 7 of the 10 core courses that must be completed before the seventh semester, I'll give it to you again, 7 of the 10 core courses that must be completed before the start of the seventh semester must be in English, math, or science. Must be in English, math, or science. And we know our core courses consist of English, math, science, and social science, or social studies, however we want to look at it, or some form of history. You know how we do. But with this new requirement, 7 out of the 10 core courses must be in English, math, or science. The minimum core course GPA is a 2.3 or take a knee. That's what they're saying. That's the slogan. That's the motto. That's how it's put out there. A 2.3 or take a knee. Then they must meet the sliding scale requirements for GPA with the SAT score or the ACT score. And I don't have the sliding scale here in front of me. But if you look at your grade point average, and if it's a 2.3, 2.5, 2.7, 3.1, 3. Whatever, then it must balance or have a comparable score over there for your SAT or your ACT. Last but not least, for a full qualifier, graduate from high school. Graduate from high school. Now, how does that play out for an academic redshirt? Academic redshirt also has to complete 16 core courses. You're not getting a pass just because you know that you're going in as an academic redshirt. Your academic redshirt, you must complete 16 core courses. How does that change compared to a full qualifier? Your academic redshirt, you must complete 16 core courses, but it does not talk about 10 of the courses being completed prior to your seventh semester, nor does it talk about 7 of the courses, 7 out of those 10 have to be in English, math, or science. But I will highlight this. You will still have to have a minimum grade point average of a 2.0. Minimum grade point average of a 2.0. Meet the sliding scale requirements, just as I stated, as a full qualifier. Your grade point average must balance out to whatever your SAT or your ACT score as per the sliding scale. In addition to that, you must be a high school graduate. You must be a high school graduate. A non-qualifier does not meet the requirements for a full qualifier or an academic redshirt. That's all it says for a non-qualifier. Does not meet the requirements for a full qualifier or an academic redshirt. Again, if you want to give us a call, you can give us a call at 917-889-8095. Love to hear from you. Love to see if you have any questions out there for us, something that we can possibly help you with. I was hoping to have the founder of Recruit 757 join us this evening, but due to unforeseen circumstances, he was unable to make it on the call this evening. So we're going to move along and postpone that great broadcast I think we're going to pick that one up next month sometime. I think he and I discussed him coming on board with us next month sometime and joining in on the conversation. So he would have some good insight on some things that he has experienced as well in his program to recruit 757, which is a recruiting process program that helps kids move along as well as what we're trying to do here at the Parents Coaching Parents Network. But our focus is on educating you, parents, you, the important ones. You, the one that possibly had an opportunity to carry this child for 9-plus months, or you, the one that got up in the middle of the night and walked in there and wiped his nose because the nose may have been a little stuffy or whatever. You, the one that had your refrigerator emptied on a regular basis because of the simple fact that you have a child that's a very hungry young man. You know, this is what we're focusing on here in the Parents Coach Parents Network. You know, I went through and I gave you some terminology a second ago when I talked about the full qualifier, academic redshirt, or non-qualifier. You know, some of that terminology may be slightly foreign to you, so I'm going to give you the insight on what the NCAA says that these terms mean. A full qualifier is a college-bound student-athlete may receive athletic aid, or may receive a scholarship, practice, and compete in the first year of enrollment at a Division I school or university. I've already said that part. That is your full qualifier. What is an academic redshirt? What is an academic redshirt? Academic redshirt is a college-bound student-athlete may receive athletic aid or may receive a scholarship in the first year of enrollment and may practice in the first regular academic term, semester or quarter, but may not compete in the first year of enrollment. Academic redshirt can practice, but cannot compete in the first year of enrollment. After the first term is complete, the college-bound student athlete or our child must be academically successful in his or her college or university to continue to practice for the rest of the year. In other words, you got to maintain them grades. Got to get them grades up. And them grades must be at the college level standard in order to continue to be able to practice for the remainder of the year. That is your academic redshirt. I'm going to go back through it one more time because I know somebody that this may affect, and I believe that they're on the call. A college-bound student-athlete may receive an athletic scholarship in the first year of enrollment and may practice in the first regular academic term, in other words, semester or quarter, but may not compete in the first year of enrollment. Cannot compete in the first year of enrollment. After the first term is complete, the college-bound student-athlete, our child, our kid, our baby in a lot of cases, for all you moms out there that still having little babies, our baby must be academically successful. In other words, must maintain his or her grades for the college or university to continue to practice for the rest of the year. What is a non-qualifier? Non-qualifier is that college-bound student-athlete cannot receive academic aid or cannot receive a scholarship, cannot practice, cannot compete in the first year of enrollment. In other words, a non-qualifier is on your dime. All right, folks, you know, we've been talking about some great stuff here this evening, and I kind of sort of wish that I had some callers to call in and ask some questions. I managed to scroll down and then realize that they actually had the sliding scale here listed. So let me give you some insight on what we're talking about when we're talking about the sliding scale. If your child has a minimum of a 2.3 as of August 1st, 2016, the minimum SAT scores they can have is a 900. Minimum ACT score they can have is a 75. If your child has anything less than a 2.3, they will fall in the category as an academic red shirt. Academic red shirt, even if you have a 2.299, still have to have a minimum of a 910 on the SAT or 76 on the ACT. If you got a 2.1, you have to have 980 or 83, respectively. If you barely have a 2.0 or you have a 2.0, the new requirements will require you to have a 1020 on the SAT and an 86 on the ACT. A 1020 on the SAT and an 86 on the ACT. Well, folks, we've been talking for quite a while here, and I've shared some information with you this evening that provided some great insight for, for you to be successful in making sure that our children have the opportunity to make it to the next level and be all that they can be. And we're not talking about just in the Army, making it to the next level and getting the best out of their situation as student athletes or as our children. I try to stay away from that term, student athletes, because that conversation came up on the Mothers of Athletes forum here that we had just a couple hours ago. And I want to say this about that term in itself. If you go back and trace the history of that term, student athletes, it came out roughly about the 1950s when the first president of the NCAA took reign. And he coined that phrase, student athletes, for the sole purpose of ensuring that we all understood that these children were students first and then athletes. We have bought off on that term. But I want you to really think about this, and I really want you to ponder this thought. Although we have bought off on that term, student athletes, is that really the right thing to do? And I know that there can be some controversy going back and forth, and, you know, we can do some comparing and contrast and everything else, and, you know, we can do some argumentative statements on whether or not they should be called student athletes, so on and so forth. But let me share this with you. The term was first brought about, like I said, back in 1950 with the first president of the NCAA, because he wanted to make sure that we all understood that our children were students and then athletes. Why? Because when our children went out there and got hurt on the playing field, be it basketball court or be it football field, soccer field, or whatever, when our children get hurt, they have no repercussions, no ability to rely on the student that's going, the school that's going to guarantee that institution will take care of that medical bill. Go back and research that history. A young man broke his neck, and his family went after workman's compensation because he was out on the football field playing football. So the family went after workman's comp. But when that word student athlete came into play, they said, no, they can't get no workman's comp. Student. He's a student. They can't do that. So be very cautious when you ride on the side of saying, yes, they're students because they have to get their education. They have to do that. Okay, I understand that. But know the meaning behind it. Know the meaning behind it before you decide to ride with that term, student athlete. That came from Mr. Taylor Branch. He shared that in a book he called The Cartel, The Rise and Fall of the NCAA. Check it out. Check it out. Well, we got to wind down here and prepare to call it a night because I have a few other things I need to do on a personal level. But it's been a great show, another great show. And as always, I love having the opportunity to share some information with the many of you out there and knowing that the many of you, you know, are getting the best of what we're putting out here on the Parents Culture Parents Network. And hopefully you continue to share this information with others around you. You know, if you have family, friends, loved ones, whoever is out there and have children that's involved in the sporting industry, hey, let's dialogue, let's communicate, let's talk. Let's make this thing happen. Help us help you here at the Parents Network. I've been your host, M.A. Scott. And as always, we say, help us help you. So until then, close us out, Keith. We'll see you next week, 9:30. Same best time, same best time.
Check out Parents Coaching Parents Network on blogtalkradio.com/parentscoachingparents.